Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, super excited to do today's Tom Talks. I'm doing it with a professional driver and the chief instructor at the Porsche Experience here in Los Angeles. It's Johnny Canavas. Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is really cool. I met you driving at the Porsche Experience.
Yeah.
And it was it is an awesome experience. And I'm not here to sell tickets. I think they probably
right.
sell pretty well on their own. But, you know, I've a lot of people have hit me up about it because I did a video there once.
Right.
And then people drive by it. They know that I like cars and they ask me all the time. I'm like, go, man.
Yeah.
It is a fun ride. Like the day, I'm saying, you know, you guys do it right. Like the facilities first class, you end up being, it's like Disney for just like people who like cars and especially Porsches.
That's it.
You end up spending way more on merch because you walk through there and you're like, I'll take 6 shirts and a hat and toys and like, it becomes a thing, but man, it is so rad. And it's all because the cars are amazing and you guys are great instructors.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it totally changes it. Like I've been there, I don't know, half a dozen times. I've done other driving schools. I've done a couple track days and it's super addictive.
Right.
I liken it to when you hear about, you know, people get into golf, right? And you hit like a perfect swing, right? You have a 5-iron and it just is clean. And then people are like, man, that feeling is amazing. It's like they're chasing that all the time. I feel a similar thing for like a great run on a lap.
Yeah,
where
absolutely.
You got like you, because there's this thing that happens with, I think I'll say mostly men where a lot of guys mm-hmm. go like, oh yeah, I know how to, I'm a good driver.
Of course. Right.
And I'll admit that I was that way too.
Where sure.
I was like, yeah, I know it. I've driven cars forever. Mm-hmm. I like driving cars. I like driving them aggressively. Therefore, I'm a great driver.
Right.
And then you show up to a place like the Porsche Experience and you go out and you do a lap and you're like, oh, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing out here. and then somebody like you goes, it's cool. I'll show you.
Right. Right.
But you do find, I am assuming that so many people have no idea what they're doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say the majority, but yeah, there's a lot of, oh, I know what I'm doing, right? That attitude of I've had all these cars.
I have a Mustang and it's super powerful. Therefore, I'm a great race car driver.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's so much to driving, so many facets. And the thing about driving is you just never stop learning either. So anyone that thinks, oh, I know what I'm doing, you know, we can typically pull stuff out of them that they may have been doing wrong for decades. You
really?
Know? So yeah, absolutely.
So many habits that you
habits,
find.
Bad habits, or just not really knowing the proper technique. Plus, it also depends on how you might have come up through driving. You know, what did you drive? Have you done track stuff? Have you gone racing?
Sure.
Did you start in high horsepower, which can mask many mistakes, or did you learn from something that required more smoothness, then go into something with some horsepower?
Because it's something that nobody wants to hear, right?
Right.
Nobody wants to hear that you'll become a better driver if you apply these skills on a less powerful car first.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to tell someone, you know, no, go get a Miata and go drive around for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to. I want this Corvette or this GT3 or whatever it might be.
Guilty.
But the, to learn in a momentum car, as we call them, it requires smoothness and you have to be absolutely perfect. So that's where you develop the proper skill set or foundation in order to go into faster stuff and drive it correctly.
I have a neighbor here who used to race competitively.
Mm, okay.
And do you know what his daily driver is here?
What's that?
A Miata.
Yeah, I believe it, yeah.
He's like, oh, he goes, I love this thing. And he drives like I've been with him in cars and he can drive like a fuck, like you feel like you're with a pro.
Yeah.
You're like, holy, like even in traffic, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like he's doing stuff you don't do.
Yeah, for sure. Right. But I mean, he was a competitive driver. Sure. But like his Miata, he's like, this is favorite thing to drive.
I came up through Miatas. I mean, they're an incredible platform to learn how to drive and race properly.
Now, I do think, because we haven't really gotten into this before when we've talked, but it is nuts to me that anyone can be like, oh, I'm a professional driver. Like, it's like, because I feel like I get this thing where, like, let's say I go to a wedding or a dinner party, and, you know, you end up talking to somebody, and they're like, so what do you do? And I'll be like, I'm a comedian. And they're like, come on. They're like,
right,
what?
Right.
And I'm like, no, I'm a comedian. They're like, you're a stand-up comedian. And you're like,
right.
Yeah.
And tell me, like, something funny, right?
Well, they want to tell something funny, but they're like, they're also just like, incredulous. They're like, wait, you actually make a living? And I'm like, yeah, man. And they're like, telling jokes. And I'm like,
right.
And then I get it. I go, you know, like here in LA, all my friends are comedians. It's the world I inhabit. But you go outside of that, and you're like, that's crazy. I feel the same way about someone being like, I'm like, you're a fucking race car driver.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It sounds preposterous.
Yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, but it's honestly, the exact same thing. So I do relate it a lot to like being an actor or a musician or even a comedian, where it's chasing that dream. It's something that may seem a bit far out there and not tangible.
Yeah.
And at some point through life, we kind of give up and sacrifice a lot of stuff to pursue this this thing.
Which is the same as the arts. Yes.
It's the same thing. And and then somehow later in life, you get there or get to at least part of it and look back and go, wow, okay, this journey brought me here. And here I am, and I do this thing, and then you can be proud of it. But yeah, it is. It's one of those. It's not for everyone. It's chasing the dream kind of thing. And
the more I've gotten into this world, like just like becoming an enthusiast about this.
Yeah.
You go like, I keep hearing a lot of the pros start with go-kart racing.
Of course. Yeah.
So I actually am so bummed that, because I remember being a kid.
Yeah.
And you go to the, I guess the public ones, you know, like
the outdoor kart.
Outdoor cart things, and you're like, and it becomes like, it's the best day of the year.
Yeah.
Right? It's like usually someone's birthday or something.
Sure.
And you're on these carts. And then it never even occurred to me that there was a world where young people, like kids, are actually racing these.
Yeah.
Like, how did you land in that?
Right. So, you hear go-karts or you explain it to the general public, and that's what they picture, is the family fun center, you know, and that kind of thing. And then you understand, you figure out later that there is this real world of professional karting. For me, it was basically my father bought me a kart at one point, and one Christmas opens up the blinds, and there it is sitting out back, and it was the best day of my life. And
was he a motor sports guy?
He was. So my dad was he was a mechanic and then a racer himself.
Okay.
And worked with Corvettes a lot back in the 70s. We're from Detroit originally, so kind of that whole world. And I was BMX racing and stuff like that as a kid. And then one Christmas, opens the blinds at Christmas, and there's this go-kart sitting outside, and we went and drove it that day, and I was hooked. I remember being hooked. I remember my grandfather looking at my dad and going, oh, you're screwed. It's in his blood.
Yeah.
You know, just knowing that was the moment.
You're in.
You know?
Yeah.
And then from there, you just get into, you know, racing, you know, and multiple classes. There's races all over the world, huge fields. If you look at a top level karting team, those budgets and the equipment and everything they have, it's equivalent to any pro sports kart team.
It's insane. One of the things, there's so much that you learn as you learn more about this world, but one of the things that has really stood out to me is just how much money it takes
it's all about money.
To like compete in this world. Yeah. Like so many, even if you watch like these, like that, there's that fantastic F1 series on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah.
It's done so well. It's produced so well.
It is.
Dramatized. And I mean, like I've said it here before that like you watch the first episode and you're like, I guess I'm an F1 fan.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You're
right.
Like, this is amazing. Yeah. But you learn about the money at that level, which is extraordinary.
Right.
But then you also, in that, a lot of those guys in the series, it's kind of split. Some of them are like, grew up extremely wealthy, and then there's the ones who they're like, we had no money,
right?
And my parents and everyone sacrificed so much just for me to be able to compete. Yep. And I've met even like instructors who were like, you know, I was in this circuit or competing,
sure,
and I just couldn't have I didn't have enough money to keep going, mm-hmm, you know.
Yep.
But it's so much money.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if we talk about instructors for a second, you know, I always joke that none of us meant to be here. You know, mm-hmm, I didn't grow up saying I want to be a professional driving instructor. I grew up wanting to be a professional race car driver.
Yeah.
We fall into this instructing world as race car drivers because it's really the perfect job for us. We stay in a car, we have seat time.
Yeah.
We can do it for periods of a time and then take off and go racing for a while and come back, that kind of thing. It's very independent. It's a nice way to make it work. But yeah, it's purely about money. I did not come up with a bunch of money, so the struggle was real coming up through racing, you know, and having regular jobs and realizing that doesn't afford me time to go do this and trying to figure out how do I make some money so that I can put a car together so I can go racing, hopefully make something of that and then progress up the ladder. And it's incredibly tough. It's frustrating. It must be a lot like what you do, going on the road in your early days and just scraping stuff together to make it work. It's essentially the same thing.
There is a real parallel with that because mm-hmm, you have nothing and it pays nothing when you're like starting out, even as you're progressing. I mean, when you're like a legit middle act, the most you'll get paid is $100 a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're not going to do 40 shows in a week.
You're
going to do like six.
Yeah.
So you have to supplement with other jobs. And
yep,
meanwhile, your friends are like, I'm buying a house. And you're like, oh, really? What about you? And you're like, I bought a fucking soda today.
right.
Yeah.
Bought a bag of Doritos at 7-Eleven. Yeah.
And it's very much like that. Yep. The thing is, that's probably similar because I've told people who are, you know, they go, they want to do stand up and mm-hmm, I want to be my career. I always go, are you obsessed though? Like, are you obsessed with it? Because if you're not obsessed with it, you're not going to. And you see it because you'll see like, hey, what happened to that guy? And they're like, well, he ended up getting like a real job, you know, a real job.
Right.
And
right.
And you're like, and I never blame him. And I'm like, yeah, but like he wasn't obsessed.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'll never forget it. And I still hear it all the time. Kind of a mentor back in the day for me once looked at me and said, how bad do you want it?
Yeah.
And that has stuck with me. And even, you know, in those down times where you're maybe thinking of giving it up, it's, well, how bad do you want it? And when it possesses you and you're obsessed with it like that and it's all you can think about, and let's say you do go work somewhere else for a while and it's, again, it's all you can think about or maybe even more than before because you're not doing it.
Yeah.
That's what fuels that desire to get back out there and do it. And for me, it's part of my everything. It's my soul. It's who I am. So getting in a car and not just driving, but racing, you know, competing, going wheel to wheel with people. That's what fills me up. That's what keeps me alive.
Yeah.
You know, so that's,
you're a competitor,
that's the drive.
Man.
That's it. Yeah.
So as a, like right now, mm-hmm, do you still, you can take a break from instructing and actually go race?
Yeah, I can. I've been very fortunate. You know, I'm not chasing the dream anymore as far as going pro racing because I'm with the job at Porsche and where my life is at the moment, that's taking up all my time. But I'm very fortunate to still have the ability to get out there and go play a little bit. So I'm working with a vintage race car team right now that travels across the country, and they invite me out to help them as far as coaching and a little bit of management, but also driving the race cars. So last year, I think I did maybe four or five races, something like that.
Yeah.
And hoping to do the same thing this year. Just did one in May up at Road America.
How was that?
Great.
What were you driving?
I was driving a little prototype called a Lola B0890, and it's essentially an LMP3 car, so a smaller Le Mans style prototype.
Uh-huh.
Quick
little
car. I think
I saw a photo of you in this, maybe, right?
Probably.
Open top,
open top car, red and white and yellow. Little 2.3 liter car, 2.3 liter, quick little thing, paddle shifts, all that.
Just is this it right here?
There it is. That's one of them. In fact, that might have been the car that
dude,
they bought.
So that's like it's very like F1-esque, right? Like I mean, they look
It's in that vein of a formula car or a proper prototype.
I've always wanted to know what is, because there is this great video of the original Top Gear cast, mm-hmm, you know, the three British guys. One of those guys goes to a track one day,
mm-hmm,
and he's like, here's what it's like to drive. I'm going to, experience or try to experience what it's like to drive a Formula One car.
Yeah.
And what they give him first is the dialed down, like
an
practice
F3 car or
yeah.
Formula 3000.
And
or
dude,
something, yeah.
This is a guy who, mind you, is not your level. He's not a race car driver, mm-hmm. but he's a guy whose whole world is just automobiles. Like he's
yeah.
driven everything.
Yeah.
He can't make it out of the first turn. Like he spins out and he's like, what the fuck? Like he, and he keeps trying to do it. And he's like, I literally, and they're trying to instruct him. What is like driving that like as opposed to a pedestrian car?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we said in the beginning about bringing people out and pulling stuff out of them when they think they're a good driver.
Uh-huh.
It's the fundamentals. It's the basics. So a car like that or like a Formula car requires incredible smoothness and precision. Mm-hmm. Precision is really the key. So you need to be turning in gently, unwinding your wheel, rolling to the pedals, feeling what the tires are doing, not, you know, manhandling that car
jerking
too much
around,
and throwing
yeah.
it around because that'll lose the control, right? So it's just being as methodical, as smooth, as precise as you can in that car. And that's a delicate thing. You know,
yeah.
in the car, I have a light touch to the wheel. You know, I'm thinking about all the basics that we teach every day too, which is, you know, look into the corner early, you know, look for your exits, roll to that power, unwind.
And
the
those
wheel.
Are actually things that you teach are actually things you're practicing.
They're in my head all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the time. Because
yeah.
you can never stop learning, like I said earlier.
Sure.
And those are the basics, you know, just like if you go to the track, I know you're fairly new to it, but you go to the track, those are the things you should concentrate on
mm-hmm.
for the rest of your track driving career or just even street driving.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that I heard a few weeks ago at COTA in Austin
mm-hmm.
is, you know, it's very similar to the stuff that I would hear at Porsche Experience.
Right.
You know, and I remember one of the first things he was like, dude, he goes, your biceps are flexing. Because
yeah,
I was like,
you're holding the wheel too tight.
I was like, oh, yeah. Because like first got on, I was like, well, I don't
yeah.
know what this track looks like, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, one of my first races, it was at Road Atlanta in the mid 90s. And I got out of that car and I could not open my hands up from the wheel because I was holding on
so tight
the whole
yeah.
race. And
yeah.
immediately I was like, okay, I must be doing that wrong.
Yep.
Now it's a delicate touch.
It's
fingertips,
yeah.
you know, it's just very gentle.
And it's one of those things too. A lot of times we did like another run of laps where he was like, do you realize how loose you are now? And
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh yeah. Like I didn't realize it, but, and then how much better that feels.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because
like,
that equals smoothness and smoothness
yeah.
is fast. So
one of the big things that when people ask me about like what you learn at those things, I go, one of the biggest differences between street, like pedestrian driving and track that really stands out, I think, to like a new person
mm-hmm.
is the application of braking and how
yeah.
it's the like inverse of how you brake on
right.
a like a street where
right.
you kind of go slow to hard, you know, like you push in later, but on a track, you
yeah.
apply that pressure like at the beginning.
Pretty much, yeah. So that, for me, when I first started, that was my eye-opening moment of
yeah.
being in a car on a track, and the first time the guy went to the brakes going, whoa, that's what we're doing?
Yeah.
You know, and that's usually, again, for anyone, that's the eye-opener. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that, you know? I didn't know that's how we brake.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to get the maximum braking power out of the car, you know? So typically, you know, you don't want to jam on the brakes. You don't want to punch the brakes.
Mm-hmm.
You still want to roll into it. But
right.
once you've rolled into it, then you're applying a pretty great amount of pressure initially
yeah.
and then tapering off of it as you're at the end of the brake zone or even trailing into the corner. You're just rolling off that brake gently.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're trying to get that maximum stopping power done pretty early in your brake zone.
Yeah. It that to me has been one of those things where, you know, especially if I don't go for a while and then I do it, it's like, oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's like that is different than going to a stop sign on a street.
Right. Know? We're trying to be nice
yeah.
and gentle and
yeah.
smooth on the street. And again, you're still being smooth on the track, but it's an aggressive smoothness.
Yeah. Cause you, essentially what you're learning, I think when you start doing these track days and things like that, is that you don't normally, most people think of a car as a tool that gets you from point A to point. It's a mode of transportation.
Sure. Right.
But on a track, I think what happens is you go, oh, I'm learning how to operate a machine.
Yeah.
Like this is a machine that has incredible capabilities.
Yep.
And it takes expertise to maximize like the capabilities
get the
of
most
the machine.
Out of it. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. No, that's what it is. And that's an interesting point because I, you know, early on, I remember when that started to click for me, it's
mm-hmm.
going, okay, I'm treating a vehicle differently than kind of we all learn to as we grow up.
Yeah.
You know, now, and I say this a lot in my coaching, is that you drive the car, don't let it drive you.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get up on the wheel. You've got to lean on the car. You got to load it up in the corner, let the suspension do the work. There's a reason, you know, your cars have the ceramic brakes and the big brake calipers, because when you go into that brake in the in a heavy brake zone, that car will stop exactly how you want to, but
yeah,
you're controlling that.
It's an amazing thing, because you guys at Porsche Experience, you have all these different, you know, I guess you, whatever areas, I don't know what you guys call them.
We call them modules.
Modules,
yeah, or
okay.
Exercises.
So there's,
yeah,
like, you know, there's like weaving in and out of the cones, mm-hmm, and there's the, what is it, the slip?
Kick plate.
The kick,
yeah,
plate.
The kick plate there, yeah.
Then there's the drift.
The low friction circle.
Yeah, so
yeah,
you just,
yeah.
I mean, it literally does feel like a Disneyland kind of
and
thing.
And we call it that. You know, we kind of refer to it as the Disneyland for Porsches.
Yeah, it's rad, man. It is the coolest thing. And I've done other schools, and they're all fun. You know, you have like top tier instructors, and you're doing stuff, but you guys do a great job there. I don't know how to explain to people who aren't like really into cars.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, they go, what do you, you know, what kind of car do you have? You tell them, they're like, wow, I guess you have a really small dick. And you're like, yeah, but that's not why I like this car. I just have a small dick. But, and then sometimes you go, wait, do I like this car because my dick is small?
Right.
And then you're like, no, this car is amazing.
No, I still like the car.
I still like the car. But I've tried to explain to people, and I don't even know if I can articulate, like, yeah, I've driven a bunch of cars now.
Yeah.
A lot of fast cars, exotics, performance cars. And I'm not just saying this because you work there, but I kind of like, I don't know how exactly to explain why this love affair develops with Porsches. And you see it a lot. You see people get into them and like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, you know, they call it Porsche passion or whatever they want to call it. But it's like, there's this feel. It's a lot of it's feel. So it, like, you end up, it's hard to describe feel, but you can end up like romanticizing the experience of driving this car. And I'm talking about from turning it on to holding the, you know, the shifter.
Right.
And the way that the car handles, it becomes like addictive, where even a trip to the grocery store in this thing, you're like excited for it.
Right.
You know?
And
it is different. Like, I have a few cars. To me, I go like, yeah, this one's great. This one rips, but this one, like, this one's special.
Special, right.
And it's,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, Porsche's always had that. You know, for me, my favorite car has always been a G model 911, so like a mid-80s 911,
mm-hmm,
and yeah, I'm fortunate to own one now, but there's just a feeling in that car. I mean, the way the door clicks, the way the door shuts, the way the steering wheel feels, the way that big tack in the middle is, all these little things. And half the time I'm driving around in that car just kind of geeking out on it, going, there's just something magical about this car.
There's something magical.
And that goes to the most current thing. A brand new 911 Turbo S is that same feeling.
Yeah.
You know? And there's every touch point is
those
very
are
Porsche.
So fast.
They are. They're very fast.
So fast.
It's an amazing car. Yeah.
It's amazing. There is just something about, like, I used to hear about that without even having any exposure, you know, to like the community.
Yeah. Right.
And I'd never driven one or anything. And I was like, you know, it's like when you hear people like they follow Fish all over the country for
right
every show. And you're like,
right.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that must be a great band.
Yeah.
But then, like, you get in these cars and you're like, oh.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it why people are in love.
Yeah, the brand has always had that, which is part of what makes it so magical.
I think what part of what happens is, to a degree, if you like cars like I do, it starts as a kid, right?
Yep.
And you have toys. And then the next thing was magazines. We'd get Road and Track, Car
Porsche,
and Driver, Motor Trend. And you just geek out. You know, you're not driving these things. You're just looking at them.
Yeah.
And then, but you're fantasizing about driving them.
Of course.
And there's something about a Porsche that I think it feels like what that dream was. Like the fantasy kind of comes to life. You're like, I feel like I'm a race car driver.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like,
yeah,
I think it kind of feels like, especially the GT cars. Now,
oh, absolutely.
I heard this thing, I don't know if this is true, that I was actually at a dealership in Florida, an enormous one that had like just the craziest inventory. Like, you know, you go to some of these dealerships you go to, and they're like, here's our 911. And you're like,
right, right.
Is there anything else here?
And yeah, like, one yellow one, huh?
No.
Yeah,
okay. And they're like, it's what we got. And this is one of those ones where they had like everything. Five GT, two RS, like, wow. Like one of those wow. things, right? But it's like huge South Florida dealership.
Okay.
And so I'm talking to the guy about it, and he was like, oh, I think he told me that the biggest selling Porsche is the Macan.
Yep.
And then maybe followed by the Panamera. I don't know if that was the order.
It's I believe it's Macan and Cayenne, I think. But
okay.
the Macan in the States, the Macan is
huge.
Incredibly popular. Yeah.
And then I through talking to him more, I mean, he's like, you know, a dealership guy and then like knew everything about all the cars. He's like, oh yeah, like those cars, like the Macan, the Cayenne, those essentially fund the GT line.
Of course,
like
right?
They, yeah, and it's like, oh, so the success of those allows this GT market, which I didn't realize is like a small market share of the Porsche brand.
Right.
Right.
It's more the niche.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't build the fun stuff unless you're making enough money to do so.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, the
way to go, Macan.
Yeah. The Macans are great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Macan's an amazing car.
Yeah.
And it's truly a large sports car or a,
yeah, it drives amazing.
A fatter sports car, if you will.
Yeah. 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 It's a great car. I've driven them.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun. So
everything kind of that you guys make or that they, you know.
Yeah, everything they make is pretty darn good, you know. You know, I'm always impressed whenever the next thing comes out. It's always that much better than the last one, and they somehow keep doing it. So it's really impressive.
And then how long, because I wanted to ask you this about, because you're on a typical week, you're at, what you could call it, PECLA?
Some people refer to it as PECLA or PECLA.
Okay, yeah. PECLA. You're there, what, 5 days a week, more?
Yeah, five, maybe more some weeks. It just depends, yeah.
And then every one of those days you're driving.
I maybe not every day, you know. I mean, being the manager of the drive team itself and majority of the track operations that happen out there, there's a lot of admin stuff, a lot of inside, a lot of meetings, office work to do. So.
Okay.
But I try to get out there as much as I can.
You know?
And
of course.
And the beauty of it is I can go out there when I need to or even want to, which is great. But
it's pretty awesome.
But yeah, I've been trying to get out there and coach more and get away from the desk a little bit.
I told you what I loved was because of COVID, you had separate cars.
Yes.
And that was a very cool experience.
Cool.
Particularly because, you know, like being a visual learner.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the car in front of you do what you're supposed to do, I think is very, very
cool. I mean, you know, when COVID came and we finally were able to come back, we had to revamp how we operated.
Yeah,
you know?
Everybody had to adapt.
I had to come up with a new concept. So it was really just implementing the traditional driving school format, which is a lot of radio coaching, a lot of lead follow style stuff, and making it work in our somewhat smaller facility, you know, and it's worked out really well. My coaches love it. The customers are giving us a lot of good feedback. And there's something about having that big car in front of you leading you around if you're a visual learner that makes it click real quick.
Yeah, I think when you see, you know, like you can have someone next to you who's like, brake here, and your brain will be like, not here, right? Like this is too early, you know.
Right.
But then when you see it, right there, you're like, oh, he is braking.
Yeah,
where
that's
he said
where the
to.
Lights are coming on. Yeah.
Then it really, I don't know, it kind of like, wait, you're like, all right, I'm going to do it there.
Yeah. I've always liked that style because, you know, I'm a visual learner as well. And it's just really nice to have that there. Plus, you know, some people like a person in the car, some people don't. It just kind of depends on what type of person.
I dig
you are.
It. You know, I dig it either way. Mm-hmm. I just feel like that was such a change from what I experienced before.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool because
that's cool.
you're seeing the expert do it and then being like, now you do it. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, as opposed to just like, break, 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 you know, turn here.
Right.
It was a very cool experience. Another thing I wanted to ask you is, so in stand-up, you know, I'll do end up doing five or six spots this week, like getting on stage, 15-minute sets. And I'm working on stuff, I'm building stuff. But you basically, when I do that, you feel like you're in the game. You're active. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you're playing ball or whatever, right?
Sure.
So I worked out six times this week.
Right.
And I could take off 5-6 days, a week, get on stage and be cool. At 2 weeks, I'll have something that I'll, like, maybe the audience won't notice if I take 2 weeks off, but like I'll do a set and I'll be like, that was weird. What happened? Well, you know, I fucked up that setup. My timing, like my rhythm was off.
Yeah.
If you take more time off than that, you'll have like sea legs where you'll be like, I didn't know what the fuck was going on. Like, I forgot words. I forgot punchlines, blah, blah, blah. Is the same type of thing applied to like pro driving?
100%.
Yeah.
You know, it's about seat time, you know, and the more experience you have, the better you are. And experience for us is seat time. It's being in a car. It's racing. It's running laps.
How much time off can you have before you go like, I'm a little shaky. I'm a little off today.
Everyone's different. You know, being an instructor helps because you're still in a car to an extent, and you actually become hypersensitive to a lot of what's going on in the car when you're just sitting there coaching it or riding in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Which really helps. But it kind of depends. I mean, I've gone many months without getting out there and driving and racing, and you get in a car and you got to shake the rust off. You got to build that aggression again.
So you've taken months off.
Oh, I have. Yeah, absolutely. Whether it be due to not having a deal or, you know, just other work going on, you know, or, you know, you're changing roles. I'm getting the Porsche job, so that's the focus for a while, whatever it might be. Uh-huh. You absolutely become rusty. And that's why it's nice to be able to get out there and still play a little bit and get in a race car a few times a year. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like I can shake off any rust I might have had for the last few weeks or few months and then get right back in and
if you have and like go. If you had like a few months off and then you get on a track, do you like right away catch yourself being like, you know, making small mistakes or?
I find myself talking to myself like, Johnny, don't do that. Come on. You know better, you know, like focus on hitting your marks, you know, like get down to that apex, you know, just reminding yourself of the basics. Like this is what you do. You didn't forget how to do it. You're just a little rusty at it at the moment. You know? And yeah, I mean, obviously the goal is to shake that rust off quickly and then just get to it, you know, but say a competitor or, you know, someone else out there that's running last weekend, the weekend before and so on, they're going to be sharper. They're going to be good. You know?
It's, and that's and the same.
It may come down to luck if I beat him, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
that person is just going to be sharper. Like the guy that's doing, you know, 10 shows more than you are a month, you know,
for sure.
Yeah.
That you see so clearly. The other mm-hmm. thing you would see is like similar to seat time. Like you would do shows here in LA if you were local and you might be doing a couple spots a week.
Sure.
And then somebody goes on the road and mm-hmm. they start doing like, you know, 6 and 8 shows on the road performing to different audiences. And then they come back and their game is just so tight.
Tight. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, oh shit.
Right.
What happened there?
Yeah. You know, it's the same kind of thing, you know? Yeah. Like, oh, you went and ran a handful of whatever series and came back. And yeah, all of a sudden we see it. Like, oh, wow, he's been running that level car for a little bit. And now he's back in these and he's spanking us, you know?
Spanking us,
yeah. So it definitely works out.
And then
way.
That gets everybody's juices going, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that's what builds the competition, which is great.
But yeah. So all you guys, I mean, all the instructors are competitive.
We're all competitive. And it's interesting because I always talk about not bringing an ego to the table, but you know, we're all competitors, so there is an ego. It's a matter of kind of pushing that aside a little bit.
Do you guys have you guys all done like timed laps?
No, at Porsche we don't time, which is by design for this exact reason. You know, you can imagine you pull the clock out and it starts to become a race, especially with a bunch of race car drivers. So trying to leave that part out of it and just kind of, you know, we're all trying to deliver the same thing and we're all there for the same reason. Now, that being said, do we have little challenges we do and stuff like that? Of course we do. Do we go to K1 after work and go karting and, you know, try to beat on each other a little bit there? Totally.
Yeah.
You
What's
know?
K1?
Go-karts. So indoor karting, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, like an indoor kart place.
Like a fun place.
A fun place. Oh, yeah. Back to the beginning, right? So the fun kart stuff, but.
But you guys.
Still driving.
You guys turn it on. When you
turn it on. It becomes our own little.
That would suck if you're like, I want to go-karting. And then like the Porsche driving team is there.
Yeah, we've
like,
done that. We've done that a few times. So that's always fun though.
I keep coming in 19th.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah.
You've also done stunt driving.
I have. Yes. Yeah.
Is that something that you have to like, do to somebody who stunt drives, like you did the Ford versus Ferrari, which is a phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
And when I think when I saw the movie, I don't know if I knew you had done that, but
it
was around that time you told me, and I was like, because that movie's really, it's really cool.
It came out very good, yeah.
Really good story. The, you know, Christian Bale, Matt Damon. It's an entertaining, just fun movie.
Right.
Great story. And there's epic driving in it.
There is, yeah.
And you're doing some of it.
I did some of it, yes. Yeah.
So, but to be like a stunt driver in films, is that like a, is there, you know, a test or a qualification, or is it just, I'm a pro, I can do this?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, it's, as race car drivers, you can kind of fall into that industry a little bit, based on a certain job, you know, not necessarily Ford Ferrari, but, you know, earlier jobs where, oh, you know, we understand you're a pro driver, you know, we're looking for this kind of thing. And then you end up there, or you're meeting the right people. A lot of us in the driving industry kind of branch over to that side because it's really good work to get when you can get it. And it's a lot of fun too, but...
What's your story behind, like, getting that job? Because that's a pretty...
The
sweet.
Ford Ferrari one?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one actually started from a good friend of mine was the lead driver in the movie. So a guy named Tony Hunt. So Tony was the lead driver. He was doubling for Ken Miles or Christian Bale in the movie. And we met on, they were shooting somewhere and I was on set with them. And it just was like, oh, hey, you know, good to see you again. And then got to meet the stunt coordinator. And long story short, it's a networking thing.
Yeah.
Get a call a week later asking if I'd be interested in doing some work. And then that snowballed into even more work with them. And there it was.
Were you already at Porsche when that happened?
I was,
and
yeah.
So did they have to give you like a permission to do something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we had to discuss that pretty much all the way to the top about what's involved and all that. They did shoot a little bit at Porsche, so there's actually a scene where they shot some of it at the PEC, which was kind of cool. But yeah, there had to be some approval, and there's a little bit of, you know, boundaries around it for me. But at the end, you know, got to drive some really cool stuff.
Yeah, and they, I mean, do they see it as good for the brand that their chief guys in this?
Of course, yeah. They like the idea that, you know, we are current, whether it be in racing or stunt guys, you know, to be able to say, oh yeah, one of our guys was in this movie, that's really cool, especially in a movie that is so big in the world of motorsports.
Yeah. So yeah. Wait, why is it, I don't know anything about this, but there's huge names or, you know, brands for like the Formula One teams. Mm-hmm. Why isn't Porsche one of those?
Well, Porsche builds sports cars. So, you know, their thing has always been endurance sports car racing. So Le Mans is really what they are, you know. They've dabbled in Formula One, back in the day, even in the early 60s and built engines for Formula One and have even gone IndyCar racing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's not what Porsche is. You know, I think Porsche is, it's sports cars and, you know, I can't speak to it as far as I don't know exactly what the reason is, but I see it as Porsche knows what they make and what they are.
What they're great at.
And they're an endurance sports car company from day one. Mr. Porsche would test cars for well over 24 hours over and over again just to see what would break. So you take that and now you do it in a race environment like Le Mans, then that just starts to make sense of why the brand is what it is.
Have you gone to that?
I haven't gone to Le Mans. That's actually been my top goal. As a kid, the reason I became a race car driver is watching the movie Le Mans with Steve McQueen.
Uh-huh.
Had it on beta back in the day, you know, and would watch that over and over again. And it really made me want to be an endurance sports car racer, especially for Porsche, watching the Golf 917 buzz around and the sounds. And there's no dialogue in that movie. It's purely about the racing, you know? And, that's kind of what generated the interest as a little kid. And, that's always been the goal. It's just, unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to go over there and race. So.
What's the longest endurance race you've done?
I've done 24-hour races.
Wait, can you explain this to me?
Yeah.
Like, what is a 24-hour race like?
Yeah, it's funny because when we say that, a lot of people that don't fully understand it will say, how do you drive for 24 hours?
Right.
You know? But a 24-hour race usually involves multiple drivers.
Uh-huh.
So typically anywhere from, say, 3 to 6. Sometimes they stack a lot of drivers in there, more than that. But you share the car based on different timing. You know, it can be multiple fuel stops, double stint, triple stint, stuff like that. It can be every hour we're coming in and replacing drivers. But basically, it's running the car, which this is actually the amazing part. Driver aside.
Driver aside, yeah.
The car itself is running at speed, at full aggression for 24 straight hours. You know, there's no break except for pulling in the pits, getting new tires, sending it back out, or if it breaks and you're fixing it to get back out, that's the break. Otherwise, yeah, that car is going full bore for 24 straight hours.
It's insane.
It's an insane thing.
Where did you do yours?
I've done them all over the country, but I've done one in particular many times, the 25 hours of Thunderhill, which is up north here in California. Mm-hmm. I've done that one about 10 times.
Is that on a circuit?
Or it's on a road course up at Thunderhill Raceway up in Northern Cal.
And you and what, three other drivers?
Or? Yeah, we've done it with, I think, three drivers, four drivers, five drivers, six, 1 year. I mean, it just depends on how the team is.
And how
together.
Many times are you getting in? Like,
it depends. I would say, you know, 4 to 5 times maybe throughout a race, you know, if I'm trying to do the math off the top of my head. And then sometimes those stints, like I said, can be short. Maybe you're in for one fuel load, so it's an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. Or sometimes, you know, based on the strategy, they're asking you to double stint or triple stint or even quadruple stint, and you can be in the car for, I think the longest I've been in the car is close to 6 hours at one point.
6 hours?
Yeah.
Of just hammering.
Just hammering. Hammering the car. Yeah, driving around and yeah, talk about having to concentrate and focus.
That's the thing. That's another thing that really stands out is, I mean, you know, on a very amateur level, you realize that, like, when you're doing laps, you know, Willow Springs or Coda or whatever, with an instructor, all your focus is here.
It is.
I mean, it's just
it has
there.
Has to be.
Has to be. Yeah. I mean, you're moving at a high rate of speed and a few thousand pounds.
Right.
And but then you go like, man, the amount of attention and focus you have to do that for 6 hours. I mean, I noticed too that, you know, if you're under heavy instruction, you're doing multiple laps over and over and over, there is a level of fatigue after that.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh man, like you're just,
yeah.
So I can't imagine after 6 hours, you just,
it's tough. I mean, that's where you start talking to yourself a lot, you know, back to what I said about being rusty, talking to yourself at that point too. You're talking to yourself, hit your marks, you know, don't make sure you're using all that track out room, you know, you're braking at the right points. You're not making mistakes, you know,
and you're texting. It's tough.
You're texting. Yeah. You're doing all kinds of stuff. But you know, it's just tough. You can start to feel ill in the car, whether it be, you know, stomach starts to get upset, or you start to get tunnel vision because you've just been in the car so long, or fumes start coming into
you
the car.
You have that vibration usually in a you know.
And you're starting to hear everything in the car that you don't want to hear. Like, what's that rattle? What's that vibration? Stuff like that. But the concentration is endless. And that's really a big part of the sport that people don't fully understand. You know, people can say drivers aren't athletes. I say go out there for an hour in a car and see what you think, you know,
because
the amount of focus it takes is huge. And that's part of the reason why in a driving school environment, there's this universal sort of number of 20 minutes. And that's, you know, typically if you go to a track day or, you know, driving school, you'll run 20 minutes to a half hour sessions at a time. Anything beyond that for the novice, the eyes start to fall, the concentration starts to go away, the fatigue sets in, and then mistakes happen.
And then mistakes happen,
So, you know,
you got to get somebody off the track.
Yeah. And now the thing's shut down because you got a car in the weeds.
How often do you have somebody who's like, this would be a fun experience, and they get out there on a lap and they're like, I don't want to do this. This is too, like, do you have people that get freaked out by it?
And that happens everywhere, of course. But Porsche, it does happen. And, you know, we're
I wish you would release a series of compilations of that.
The instructors are trained really to kind of handhold a little bit and help get you through that. Our goal is we don't want you to quit it. You know, some people will get sick, and at that point, there's nothing you can do but sit, grab some water. But the others that are timid, it's like, well, we can start really slow. We don't have to go fast. That's the other thing. And even at a regular track day, you don't have to go out there and put down a qualifying lap.
Yeah.
You can just tool around for a while. Just get used to it. Get the feeling, you know, and build up to it. And that's what we try to do.
That's cool, because it is so, like, that's what I try to tell people who have never done it, who like driving. I go, it's so foreign to what you've experienced on pedestrian streets.
It is. It kind of breaks a lot of the rules or habits that we all start with as a young driver up through your regular street driving career, you know? Even the way you hold the wheel.
Yeah.
You know, do you drive around everywhere at 9 and 3? No.
Yeah.
But on the track, that's where you should be, you know? Are you looking into every corner as you drive around before you turn? No. But on the track, you should, you know? And then, like you said, the brakes, all those different things it's a different technique than we use every day.
Yeah. Do you ever, every once in a while, maybe not even randomly, do you ever get like the equivalent of what you go like, this is like a gifted driver. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Where you see like, wow, this person.
And this has happened at really a lot of schools I've worked at over the years. One of my favorite things is always, you know, you get the husband and wife that come in. And the husband's like got the helmet in hand, maybe race shoes on, you know, kind of geared up. And and we always joke that you don't want to be that guy. But they come in and the wife is there because he's kind of forcing her to do it maybe. Or she's into it, but like, eh, whatever. It's his day.
It's his thing.
By the end of the day, we get her faster. We get her running quicker laps, making less mistakes. And it, and honestly, that's not, it's not to just show him up.
No.
But one, women listen and apply better than men. That's a huge part of it. So they're a better student. Mm-hmm. But it's just nice to see because she might not have some habits that we need to break.
Right.
While he may come in with some bad habits that now we're spending half the day fixing.
Correct.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Versus a fresh person to mold that we can turn into what we need to much quicker.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how many fights happen on the way out of this
Right. That's where we just see
like,
you later.
Isn't it crazy how much faster I am than you? He's like, shut up.
Yep. Yeah. Now it's always a fun thing to see, kind of tail between the legs at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, I can guarantee you something. You could not get my wife to beat me in a race.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's the challenge.
It's her birthday today. Happy birthday. You'll always be slower. She actually won't even drive the cars. So.
Perfect. That's better, right?
She would be like, do you have one that, that makes music? And stuff?
Right.
Have you ever done the Cannonball Run?
No, never have. Used to love the movie, but yeah.
Any interest in doing it?
Yeah, I've always kind of had a bit of interest in that because it's...
For people that don't know, that's like the New York to LA drive where it's similar to your, what you're saying. It's you do it with, you know, you get in a car with a few people.
Yeah.
And like...
There's a convoy of people.
Convoy of people. Now, I've heard like that was traditionally done as like, you know, let's see how fast we can do it. That now, with like technology now, people... who tried to like break that record will get like a helicopter to you know spot checkpoints.
I don't doubt it. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Because they're trying to like break those records,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
But I always thought that would be a fun thing to get a crew together.
Yeah, it would be.
Leave at, you know, 10:30 at night or whatever and then just
head out.
Mob
here we
it
go.
Down all the way to LA.
Yeah, no, I've never been a part of one of those.
This is it's a cross country drive New York to LA and you're trying to do it essentially just refuel as fast as you can.
Yeah. And there's some, I don't know any of the details, but there's some rules around it now that didn't exist like back in when the original movie came out with Burt Reynolds and all that Cannibal Run. I mean, that was, those days were just like, let's go flat out the whole way. I don't know, maybe some of that's happening now, but I think there's some kind of more guidelines and rules and protocols around it now.
What would you do it in? You have to do it in a sedan, I suppose, right? Because... Otherwise,
do you?
Well, you don't have to. I'm saying for the sake, unless you're picking people up and someone's getting out. But if you want the same crew, a two-seater is just going to be two of you. I mean, I guess you can do it.
I don't know. I don't know. New 911 Turbo would sure be a nice car to do it in.
Well, why don't we petition Porsche and see if they'll hook it up?
Well, I'll try that.
Hi, Porsche.
Might work.
Really? Hey, dude, let's do it. Let's ask him. Yeah, I would. That would be amazing.
It would be fun. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, and we'll follow all the rules of the road, especially the speed limit.
Wink, wink. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We will never go 160 miles an hour.
No.
No.
Of course not.
No, of course not. That would be very dangerous. I've driven. Pretty much everything in the Super Series McLaren.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time with McLaren.
Yeah, they hooked it up. And I've driven like a handful of Ferraris, which are, all these cars
are
amazing. The most terrifying car that I've driven, I did a video in it, was McLaren's 765 LT.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I even chatted with Daniel Ricciardo, the F1 driver for McLaren. And he was
very
like, I was like, everyone I've talked to who's driven that car was like, you should have to pass a test.
Yeah.
To, and he was like, agreed.
Yeah.
He said, totally agreed.
It's a lot of car.
I've never had felt something that was that fast and that responsive in a literally terrifying way.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, you just have to be rich and you can have this?
Right. Know? That's what's scary. Yeah.
It's scary. And then, you know, when you're seeing these zero to 60 times that are now coming out in the electric cars.
It's ridiculous.
So Tesla announced the Plaid S, a new model that's coming out, and it's touting a zero to 60 in 1.9 seconds. My thought on this, honestly, as somebody who just enjoys cars, and I'm like, so that seems like a lot to just give someone who just goes, but I can buy this.
Absolutely.
And you're like, yeah, but I mean, that's just going to be in the hands of an amateur.
It's dangerous now, right?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And that time is going to keep going down. Like, we're at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
So it's like,
you're right, yeah.
You know, a couple of years from now, they're going to be like, hey, did you hear you can go 0 to 60 in 0.08
right.
like, seconds? You're like, wait,
right.
What?
And where am I doing that?
Where am you I know? Doing that? Yeah. And like, these cars are going to go through buildings.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, because you got to stop it too. The thing. You got to be able to stop it as fast as you just accelerate.
And I'm somebody who, like, the idea of something faster and faster is exciting.
Sure.
But also aware that, like, you know, you got to be able to handle that. You
yeah,
know what you're doing.
Right. That's a lot. Yeah. I mean, two something, three something is a quick car.
Dude, do you remember know? Just like in the 90s?
Yes.
And they were like, this new 911 goes 0 to 60 in 6 points.
Right.
And you're like
no
wow.
Way. Wow. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man.
And now we're at like not just half, but half of that now as the time. It's like, it's outrageous.
It is. In a car that weighs twice as much.
Yes.
You know, that's the crazy part. You're talking about a big car that, maybe not big in size, but heavy car. 5,000 yeah. plus pounds getting, you know, just under 3 seconds, 0 to 60. That's phenomenal. That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
And you're right. We're at the beginning of it. What's going to happen? What's 10 years from now? Where are we at?
Yeah. I mean, the idea that there's it used to be like in the last, even before these electric cars started to be produced heavily, anything like, you know, sub 3.5, you're talking about it would be like at least $300,000.
Right. Super.
So then you go, yeah. Well, there's, you know, there's a few hundred of those. Like,
right.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
but the fact that it's going to be a mass-produced thing.
That anyone can go buy. You go buy one today and roll it off into the street. You know?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's going to be some epic dash cam videos coming out of
probably
car accidents we can't even wrap our heads around.
Yeah.
Because that, just the physics of that, right?
And then, you know, if segueing a little bit into electric cars, I mean, the way you drive them is different. You know, the torque curves are different now.
Yeah,
you're not dealing with a ramp up, like a power curve or a power band,
right?
Like you would out of, you know, a combustion engine car. You're talking about linear power that is essentially light switch.
Yeah, there's no lag. There's no turbo lag. There's none
no,
of that, like,
it's right there. You know, you're getting, you know, call it 700 plus horsepower to the wheels the second you push it, you know, which is amazing.
It's
you know,
amazing.
But it requires a little bit of a different driving style. So, you know, if I'm lapping one of these types of cars around, you know, you're making sure that wheel is where you want it before you start adding too much power, or else the car is just going to end up understeering or oversteering, or just you're going to fight the car a little bit. You know, you also got to think about the regeneration of the battery and the heat and all that. So there's a lot of things that come into play when you're putting a fast lap together in these cars versus how you might have driven, you know, a flat six, you know, a
sure.
GT3 or something like that, you know. So it is quite different. And, you know, it's something that we're working on too at the PC, is getting people to understand that these cars are a little bit of a different animal.
Mm-hmm.
And while driving is driving is driving, there's some little things to understand about these cars that are different. You know, you're
yeah.
talking about two motors, you're talking about the torque that is higher than anything else that's out there. And
that weight is different.
And the weight's low on most electric cars. The batteries are on the floor. So you don't have a high CG. You know, the center of gravity isn't high. You're not dealing with a lot of roll out of the car.
Yeah.
You're dealing with like a flat skateboard almost that doesn't move around so much, which is great. As a race car, you want to build a car that way where the weight's low.
Low, yeah.
So it's really good, but it's a different feeling for the general public. You
yeah,
know?
I got to do launch control
mm-hmm.
at PCLA
yeah.
in the Taycan Turbo S, and all I had driven before was like a Tesla Model
yeah.
X or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And you were like, hey, pin your head back
yeah.
to the seat. And I was like, okay. And then you walked away and I was like, and then I did it and I was like, like,
yeah,
it
that's
really,
why you said it.
Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, that's why you're supposed to listen.
Yeah.
I wish I was
yeah.
a woman.
Yeah.
But yeah, I gave myself whiplash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it will do that. I mean, yeah. you know, again, it's 2.6 seconds. That's wicked fast.
It's so fast, man.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, like those are the times, like the times that are being mass produced now are the times that previously you would have to be like a billionaire to experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Like, and you'd maybe see one at some car show thing or on TV, but you know, now you're seeing these cars, these numbers we're talking about, you go right out here, you'll see one.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I got to say that you also treated me to a hot lap with you driving in a GT3 RS.
Right.
And I have a GoPro. I wish I had prepped it for today. Mm-hmm. But it's me just laughing because you're just mobbing this track and this thing. And incredible, man. Like, the car is incredible. Your skill level, it was like...
It was fun. I know. I remember some of the screen grabs from that.
Yeah.
With your face kind of wide-eyed.
Like, I did.
Yeah. No, that's fun, man. That's what we like to do the most, is kind of showing people what it's all about and giving a lap like that and really putting a car like a GT3 RS, which is one of the best cars in the world, you know, through its paces.
Yeah.
You know.
Can you pull up, by the way, Brendan Schaub's GT2 RS real quick? So this is a buddy of mine. He got a GT2 RS, and then he had that modified. So
yeah,
his I don't know if you go to if you go to like the all search as opposed to the image, it might pull up when they modified it, because he did it like on a show too, and it is so outrageous, man. So his GT2 RS makes like 970. horsepower, and he had, I mean, this thing is so crazy, man.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a beautiful car.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like to track that thing though, because it's so much.
It's a lot, you know, and it comes back to that, you know, the horsepower versus, you know, momentum kind of thing. But also it's, you know, at some point you can have too much power, depending on, you know, what tire you're running, you know, is the suspension modified, all these things that need to also be done to keep up with that amount of power.
Yeah.
That car itself, adding that much power, I mean, it's pretty much capable as it stands.
Yeah, as a stock.
I mean, it's plenty, you know, for the rest of the car. But yeah, that's a pretty car. I mean, I've driven GT2 RSs a handful of times, and they're amazing, you know.
Will you tell me, tell them, what's the Porsche that you love, that you said that you now own? What's the, like?
Oh, a G model 911. So I own a 1984 Carrera, and it's just, it's the Porsche you've seen your whole life, you know, from, it's the same car that was made from 74 up through 89. It's that iconic 911.
Yeah.
It's that, you know, I saw a red 911 SC when I was a kid. That was the first one I ever saw. And I remember, I can still picture that today. And it's just always been one of my favorite cars. They were hand-built back in those days, and they're just very unique. There's nothing built like them. They're built like a tank. It's the most visceral car I've ever driven as far as just feedback.
Yeah.
And when I say that, you don't need to go hustle the car around. I don't need to go put a qualifying lap in to get
to
that
feel
feeling.
That. Yeah, yeah.
I can drive it up here and get that feeling. You know?
Put a lot of miles on yours? You drive it?
I probably should be driving it a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, at one point, it was kind of my daily.
Really?
You know, yeah. So, and that's the beauty of them. They're bulletproof. If they're well maintained, those cars will go forever.
Well, that's the other cool thing I would say that I've learned about the Porsche community, is that there are people that buy, you know, certain manufacturers' cars, and then they're like, I got it. And then they're like, there it is.
Yeah.
Right? And they have it.
Right.
And you see it in their garage, or they'll send you a picture of it, and it's got, you know, it's 6 years old and it's got 370 miles on it. And you're like, cool.
Yeah.
But a lot of Porsche owners are just, they hammer, like they drive those things, man.
They drive them. I mean, again, Porsche is a driving company. Those cars are meant to be driven. And the fact that you can jump in a 356 today and, you know, you could daily it all week if you want, and it's going to work perfectly for you. A well-maintained one, obviously, but, and they don't like to sit. You know, my dad's got a couple of them, and, you know, he'll call and say, well, this one's leaking. I said, well, here's how you fix it. Go drive it, you know, because, you know, seals dry out. I mean, those cars aren't water cooled. It's all oil or air cooled with a lot of oil, like a race car, dry sump engine with 12 quarts of oil in that thing. And the seals will start to dry up and it will start to leak. They all leak a little bit, but you start driving them, everything gets warm, you exercise the gaskets, all that stuff, and all of a sudden, now it's a little more sealed up, and you enjoyed it. You know, there's nothing better than that. And like I said, my car's an 84, so that's pretty old at this point, but it doesn't feel that way when I get in it.
It doesn't.
At all.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. I mean, besides, like, you know, the fact that the air conditioning doesn't work great, everything else, I mean, it's as equal to a modern car as anything else.
That's, you know, awesome, man.
Yeah, I love it. It's, yeah, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'll keep the one I have now.
You will.
Forever.
You will, you know? Yeah. Just keep adding to them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's already a problem.
It's an addiction, I know.
Yeah, yeah, my wife's like, are we done with cars? And I just go, are you out of your mind?
Right.
She's like,
right, are we done,
like,
breathing?
She's like, well, how many are you going to get? I go, as many as we can fit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We'll put cars on the roof.
Sure, right. Stack them, whatever you got to do. Yeah.
I'm stacking them now. So.
Yeah, good.
Well, look, man, I really appreciate you coming by.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure, like, getting to know you. I love, you know, the experience I've had at PCLA. Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, this is it's not a paid endorsement. I really love it. I recommend it to people if you want a fun experience, if you like cars, especially if you like Porsches. Like, the whole setup, man, it's so well done. Walking through that showroom, you see in, like, these vintage and rare ones and ones that were in races. And then you have the big glass where you can see, like, the mechanics working on, like,
right,
a club sport
division,
or, like,
like,
all this, like, awesome stuff. And then you get out there and, like I said, it's a playground.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great day. It's a fun event. If you want to do it, I highly recommend you
cool.
do it.
Yeah. And thanks for having me. This has been a pleasure. And,
yeah, man. Absolutely.
We need to get you back out there though soon. I haven't seen you there in a while. So
I'll be there.
Cool.
I promise.
Cool.
Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you.
See you guys.